Wasn't Othello probably the most arduous of all the pictures to make in terms of the length of time it took you to make it?
Well, it was a big, I don't know what, maybe almost 2 years between starting it and finishing it because of lack of money. It was arduous, is maybe not the word, just maddening, because I had all the money. I had a contract with, I went to Rome after the collapse of Cyrano, called Cagliostro, which I made at Scalera Film Studio, which was the biggest studio in Italy. And Mr. Scalera, the head of this great outfit, decided that he wanted to finance me making Othello. And I wrote a contract. We wrote a contract together. And I gathered together my actors and my Italian crew and Trauner and everybody. And away we went to Mogador to shoot it. And when we arrived in this then very little known, out of the way port on the Atlantic coast of Morocco, with everybody there, everybody checked into hotels and so on, 2 days after we'd arrived, we got a telegram saying the costumes wouldn't come because they hadn't been completed. And then a day later, a telegram came saying that they hadn't been started. And then a telegram came saying that Scalera had gone bankrupt. So I had a company of 50 people in North Africa and no money. But we had film and we had our cameras. So how can you shoot Othello without costumes? And that was how I got the idea to shoot two reels in a Turkish bath, because if people are in a Turkish craft, they can't be wearing any clothes.
Yeah.
So we worked in the Turkish bath for about 3 weeks while a lot of little tailors in the village with Carpaccio reproductions pinned up on their walls made the clothes.
Incredible.
And I shot as much as I had money in the bank. I shot until that ran out.
Your own money?
Yes, and then everybody had to go home till I could earn some more or find some more. In fact, we stayed another week by virtue of a fellow who arrived and arranged pre-sales for some strange countries like Dutch East Indies and Turkey and places like that. And we got together about $6,000 or $7,000 and stayed on a week or two more, thanks to him. Mm-hmm. And I gave him the role of Lodovico.
Mm-hmm. In the picture.
Because there he was. He's very poor in it, but he was a big help getting us the money. He wasn't an actor. And then that ran out, and everybody had to go home. And McLeamore was playing Iago with his partner, went back to Dublin, and they opened their theater, and they couldn't be brought back just what I wanted, because they had a theater, a permanent theater.
Yeah.
So they had to start and have a season. So even when I got the money, I had to wait till they were free. Which made a long wait, even longer than it took me to get the money. And then when they were free, we went back again to Africa and then to Italy, where we shot all over the place and finished it. But that began the story of how long it took me to make a movie. You know, look at it. Even on his own pictures, it takes him over 2 years to finish it. You know, that's three, whatever it was, and so.
I didn't know that got around.
Yes, it's still very much so, and it all began with Othello, and that particular one. And Othello wasn't arduous. We had tremendous fun doing it. It was a very happy experience for me, in spite of these terrible troubles.
Whenever you could work.
Yes, whenever we could work, it was great fun doing it, and everybody got along awfully well, and it was... our headaches were all riotous and amusing. You know, it wasn't anguish.
Mm.
like Arkadin was. Arkadin was just anguish from the beginning to the end. Or anything else?
Trauner told me that he enjoyed that experience terribly on Othello. He loved it and remembered it as an insane experience, but a lot of fun.
Yes, and he's a wonderful art director and a wonderful man. Devoted to him. He's marvelous. Had his job and an extraordinary fellow. And of course, he hadn't much he could do with no money, you know.
He did.
But he had a very large staff. Because Turner worked with it. If you could imagine a picture that was being shot in a real location where there's no money except what I happen to have left in the bank. And Turner had three assistants. And so when he remembers it as a crazy experience, there was nothing as crazy as Turner, who insisted on keeping three assistants in Mogador.
Oh, my God.
You know, drafting pictures of where we would put the matting that we bought in the souk on the wall. You know, that's all I had to do because there's nothing we could build.
God. I often wondered what he did on the picture since he was shooting in a cabin.
Well, he designed everything. It was all going to be built originally, at first in the south of France. The whole thing was going to be set.
Mm-hmm.
And then we decided real things. And he found Mogador.
Mm-hmm.
He found the locations. He went and got
the castle.
And, the castle, that's Safi, partly Safi and partly Agadir. It's all different places made to look like the same.
Yeah.
It's shot in four different towns in Morocco and about five places in Italy. Then there is a set that he did make in Italy, which we built in a studio in Rome.
Which one was that?
Well, it's the Doge's palace.
Mm-hmm.
And poor Traunert was reduced to, you know, a mere wisp of what his original conception was.
Do you feel Othello was a weak man? Why is he destroyed so easily? Or is he not so easily destroyed?
He's destroyed easily because of his simplicity, not his weakness. You know, he really is the archetype of the simple man, you know, and he's has never understood the complexity of the world or of human beings. He's a soldier. He's never known women. It's a favorite theme of Shakespeare's. You see, the curious thing about Lear too. Lear clearly knows nothing about women and has never lived with them at all.
And doesn't understand his daughters at all.
I'm saying women.
Yeah, women.
Women. Mm. His wife is dead. She couldn't exist. The play couldn't happen if there were Mrs. Lear, obviously. He hasn't any idea what makes women work. He's a man who lives with his knights. He's the, you know, he's that, the all-male man whom Shakespeare, who was clearly tremendously feminine in many ways, regarded as a natural-born loser in a tragic situation. Othello is another fellow like that. Total incomprehension of what a woman is.
And treats her, in fact.
Yes.
In the picture.
Like within this, man. Like this, you know,
yeah.
The whole treatment of her when he kills her is the treatment of a man who's out of touch with reality as far as the other sex is concerned. All he knows how to do is fight wars. And deal with the anthropophagi, men whose heads do grow beneath their shoulders, you know.
Yeah. And that's in fact his tragedy then.
Yes.
He also doesn't, he couldn't imagine a person like Iago, could he?
No. And neither can a lot of critics, as a result of which we have eight libraries full of idiot explanations of Iago, you know.
Yeah. And you're
when everybody has known an Iago in his life, if he's, you know, been anywhere.
You pointed that out to me. I didn't realize it. Somebody said that there was an implication of impotence in Iago, and that didn't sound like you, or you said it somewhere, and I thought it didn't sound like you saying that. You do?
I admit it. I don't think that is necessarily the truth of the play, but that was the key to that movie, is that he was
really
impotent, yes.
That he couldn't get in between the sheets. Of course, there is that talked about toward the end.
That's right. In the play, it's pretty clear that that isn't so. It was just a way of helping the audience over that hurdle and a way of away from Ichliamore to play it. When I did it in the theater afterwards, there was no suggestion of it. But I think it's a perfectly valid way of doing it.
Yeah.
In the movie, it is that is the way it's played.
But the that's
sorry to disappoint you,
well,
but
no,
I must
mean,
be honest.
I can see that in the, now that you say it. But what came across to me much more than that, as
I don't think it's central, but it was an element that we used for the actor.
For the actor, because
yes, I wasn't anxious for the audience to understand it.
Yeah, because
it was important for the actor to have it as a means to performing the part.
So that's what I meant when I said it didn't sound like you.
Right. No, I wasn't informing the audience of that, but if you can find it, more power to you. It was basically something for the, to use Stanislavski, Argo, you know, to use.
Mm-hmm.
And I do a lot of that with actors.
Yeah.
You know, I'm always making fun of a method, but I use a lot of things that are from that.
Just to help the actor.
Yes.
Does Othello feel guilt at the end after Iago is proven guilty? You think Othello feels
it? Depends on how you play it. You
well, mean, in your picture.
I wonder. I've forgotten because I played it afterwards in the theater, and I remember my performance in the theater much more clearly than in the movie.
Yeah. Well, the movie performance was so cut up, wasn't it? Over continents and so on.
Yes.
I mean, in that sense.
Yes. No, but I mean, it's just...
It's a great performance.
I just did it later in the theater, you know. And
you remember it.
Much more clearly because I revised a lot of my ideas about the...
Playing.
About playing it in the theater.
Well, did you feel guilty in the... guilt in the stage production of it? After Iago is proven guilty.
I don't think guilt is the right word. I think when you're on that level of, you know, that Othello is so close to being a French farce, you know, because all he's got to do is say, show me the handkerchief and you ring down the curtain, if you analyze it.
Yeah.
It's so close to being an idiotic farce that it can only exist on a level very close to real tragedy. And when this, you know, he is so blasted by the, at the end of this thing that I don't think, I think guilt is too small an emotion. Mm. And anyway, he's not a Christian.
That's true, isn't it?
And that's central to the character, is that he's not Christian.
Not a Christian, yeah.
And Shakespeare was very, very aware of who was a Christian and who wasn't. Just as he was very aware of who was a southern European and who was a northern.
Mm.
Who was the decadent and who was the palace man and the outdoor man. Those things are run all the way through Shakespeare very interestingly.
Fascinating. Do you think that, did you mean the removal of the armor when Iago's removing the armor as a sort of visual metaphor for what Iago's doing to Othello at that time?
Oh, yes, I suppose that's self-evident. You know, it's like the net. There you are. It's something the audience... It's instant metaphor, like instant coffee, you know. There it is.
Yeah. It's awfully good because it's really integral to the scene rather than being an added... I mean, that's the scene. That's what the scene is, and that's...
There was a moment at the end of that, though, that remained a standing joke with Michael and myself for years, and later I've used ever since... Because he had to pick up my cloak and go. And he picked it up and looked meaningful and all that. And I finally said to him, Michael, pick up the cloak and go. And that's become a sort of basic thing when an actor wants to enrich his performance. I say, you pick up the cloak and go. That's all.
Why did you give Rodrigo a white poodle?
Because the Carpaccio is full of them.
Oh,
it's not a poodle. It's a Tenerife, very special kind. We had a terrible time getting it. It's pure Carpaccio. All the dandies in Carpaccio fondle exactly that dog. It just runs all the way through Carpaccio. On which all the costumes were based, and everything's based on Carpaccio, and that's almost a trademark. It's like Whistler's Butterfly. They're always clinging to these terrible little dogs.
I didn't know
these that. Dandies are.
I haven't seen those paintings. Obviously.
Extraordinary, and it looks as right. You recognize Othello because we copied. There's no designing.
Where'd you
they
find
simply
that wonderful made. Set in the when they're? I think it's similar to the set where you die with her when you fall at the end with her. But there's a thing where they run around and there's water on the bottom.
Yes, it's a Portuguese cistern in a town in Morocco called Safi. Beautiful Portuguese cistern.
Is it the same place as you died?
No.
It isn't the same. It looks similar.
No, it looks similar. I wanted it to. That's why I found a place in Viterbo in Italy where that happens. So that it seems to be part of the same castle. That's why you
yeah,
believe it.
Yeah.
If it's not
well,
that, it's...
circular.
Yes, and what I use the circular thing as a part of it.
Motif?
Is architecture the word we are searching for?
Yes. did you consciously go in Othello from bright lights into shadows?
Yes. I think I don't know, consciously, I don't think anything visual that you see in a picture of mine is unconscious.
Well, I don't mean unconscious.
I'm certainly deliberate, sure. It's
yeah.
all part of the... it isn't the kind of Germanic master plan that's made in the study before the picture
no,
is
what
made.
Are you doing
but it evolves. But it evolves and becomes a plan. Because
mm.
I make a master plan and then throw it away, but I make it.
Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yes, I don't. Not shots, but the whole. I project the whole movie, and then it never bears any relationship to that afterwards.
None.
None.
Really.
Someday one of them will, but there's always some reason why it can't. There aren't any sets, so I have to shoot it in the railway station or
yeah.
in the Turkish bath, which is the fish market. It's something, you know.
Yeah. Well, you have to be very flexible then.
Yes, and I am.
Yeah.
I like to be. There's nothing depresses me more than the rigidity and. Movies. It's terrible when they just sit down and wait for the cloud to go or the noise to stop or whatever it is.
You work.
I always go
through it.
Something else. Find out something
right.
else to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 8 reels later. You know, there's always something to do. I never wait.
No, I think you're too impatient. Also.
No, because I think the movie dies. I don't mind waiting. I'm lazy physically. I'd love to be very happy to sit. But I think the movie dies, the actors and the crew and everybody. Yes. It's a basic part of my the way I work with a group of people is that I always move. But not because I'm impatient, but because of what I think will happen to the picture if we don't.
And you keep the energy of the picture
yes.
up all the time.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Try to get it as close to a dress rehearsal as you know as possible, and as far away from a first reading.
All the music in your films, when it's your music, with the exception, I guess, of Touch of Evil, which isn't that kind of movie, it has a classical quality to it. You know, there's nothing cheap about the music in your pictures. I mean, it sounds good on its own, I think. Although it doesn't detract.
Well, of course, I attach an awful lot of importance to it.
But I mean, it must go back to your early...
To radio and
your,
the theater.
And your early love of music.
Yes,
I mean, good
all
music.
That, yeah, all those things. And I was very lucky in having Benny Herman for a while. And since then, I've used some good composers, but I tend more and more now to get music that isn't composed. So that I can control it, you know, so that I'm not at the mercy of what he turns up with after he's already under contract. You know,
how do you get music that isn't composed? What do you mean?
Well, just already written.
Oh,
know.
I see what you mean, yeah. Classical or
yeah.
Well, the music in Othello, for instance, was wonderful.
Yes. Well, that's an extraordinarily talented man.
The composer we're talking about in this exchange is Francesco Lavagnino.
He did the music for Chimes at Midnight, too. I think it's extraordinary, the music for the battle.
Yeah, great. That's right. Yes.
But I took it and I played it three times over at Chowder and all kinds. I did all those kind of Beatles tricks with it, but yeah. Still awfully good. But I thought it was superb.
Great score.
You know, we had, he used 40 mandolins at one time. Mm-hmm. You know, and that main theme, the opening theme of the funeral, is just hair-raising. It's so good.
Yes, it's really great. Some people have said that they thought that Arkadin was patterned after Lowenstein, Kruger, or Zaharov, but nothing of that.
No, they were all sly. You know, I'll tell you what he is. He occupies a position similar to theirs. Mm-hmm. But his character is not based on any of them. If there's any real man, he's, there are elements of Stalin.
Where did you get the idea for those Goya-like masks at the party?
They are not Goya-like. They're from Goya.
They are.
They are all exactly real, made from Goya. Every one of them is exact reproduction of a Goya etching.
Well, why did you decide to do that?
Why not? You know, if you're going to have
a party.
A party in Spain, you know, why not?
Yeah. I felt that all the characters in the movie were very lonely.
Yes, that's it. That's the, yes.
You know, everybody, and they all sort of look back on a sort of a weird, lonely past.
Yeah.
Particularly, most movingly, I wouldn't say particularly, but most movingly conveyed by that lovely scene with Katina Paxino, which
is
through that scrapbook, which I think is maybe the best scene in the picture.
Yes, I guess it is. That and Zook.
Yes, the two of them. Zook is Tamiro.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Well, that's been
changed. There's a name I remember.
Yeah.
I love the name, so Zook, that's why.
And also, Redgrave is marvelous.
Yes, but that's not on the same level. It's a wonderful turn, a marvelous performance, but the scrapbook's the best thing. And she was so great in it.
She really was. When you wrote the novel of Arkadin, did you plan it?
I didn't write the novel of Arkadin, nor have I ever read it.
You didn't write it?
Didn't write one word of it and never read it.
How could they release it with your name on it?
Maurice Bessie wrote it in French, published it with Dolivet, my partner in the movie's permission.
Not yours?
Not mine. I have neither written it nor read it.
Well, that's rather awful. I mean, you know, it's been published in every language.
I know.
And assigned by you.
I know. It was sold. I gave permission
for a
serial to be made, to be sold to the Daily Express, to run with my name. Because who cares in a newspaper for 6 issues just before the opening in London to sell it?
Mm-hmm.
And that permission apparently went for everything. And I never bothered to stop. I don't give a damn about this. I never read it.
Oh, my God.
I've seen it in bookstores and all that.
You know, that's very funny because it's quoted in a couple of books, you know, about you. See? And they say, and they talk about the style of the writing and that being rather simple and, you know, very. And I read this section and I keep saying, she's really not very good. You know, and I thought, well, so he was in a bad. He wasn't in a particularly, because it doesn't have any particular style at all.
No, it's some hack did it. I don't think even Bessie. I think he got some hack and worked on it. It was originally in French, and then for some French newspaper, then sold to the English to promote the picture. But I never got a dime from it either.
Oh, God. Well, it was published in hardcover.
Yes.
Here.
And in England, and in the continent.
Paperback and everything.
All that. I've never read it, much less written it.
That's not really funny, because...
Yeah, it is, I think.
Well, it is funny, I suppose, but, you know, all those poor people who read it and thought they were reading your work.
I know, well,
analyzing
they
the analyzing.
Yeah, well, it's good for them.
No, I never read it either, you know, because I have it, but I never read it.
Well, I'll sign it for you.
Okay. I've never seen Dietrich have such an incredible spirituality as she has in that movie. You know, she transcends everything. She becomes really a mythical figure in the picture. And when she stands there at the end and says that line about
he was some kind of a man.
Some kind of a man. It's such a cosmic moment.
Yeah, she's absolutely super.
The use of her is marvelous because you know to use her that way and but then she does really achieve a sort of a.
That whole character was written after the picture started. We were well into the picture before I thought up that character or anything.
And then
I called her up. Yes, I only thought up the character if I could get Marlena. Wrote it if I could get her. Otherwise, no such character, no such scenes.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And called her up, and she says, "Well, I'll go over to Paramount. I think there's something left over from some picture for that. Then I'll go over to." You know, she never read the script or asked what it is. She just went to do it. Immediately went to the wardrobe, you know, find an old wig from something and this, and ride with it all. They didn't know she was in the picture. I told you that.
Told me
yeah.
That. Yeah.
Hey, that's Deet. Isn't that Dietrich, you know, in the Russians?
Are you there?
Yes.
Oh, God. Did they recognize Mercedes McCambridge?
Yes.
She's very good in it, too.
She's a very good actress.
I want to watch, she says.
Yes.
Oh, that's really a sick scene.
Yes.
God. Anyway.
Well, that's how I got the picture approved by Zug Smith, you know, by writing that real sick scene after he saw that. Oh, he was so happy. We could do no wrong. Just go right ahead and shoot after he read that.
That was really his meat.
Yeah, he loved that.
He never gave you any trouble at all, did he?
No. Nor did anybody in the studio until they saw the final cut.
It was all done.
All they did was beg me to make long-term deals with him all, every day.
Yeah, I know. It's an awful story.
But it's a mystery. Not just an awful story. There's something missing there that I don't know about. I'll never understand. It's the only difficulty I've ever had that I can't fathom.
Yeah.
You know, even the theories don't really satisfy me.
The theory that they just so detested the movie that they couldn't...
I think that's really it. I think it's true. I think the movie rocked them in some funny way. You know, movies weren't quite that black then, you know. Now people are used to that. You know, and it was a little blacker before they...
Cut, yeah.
Yes. Because it was the comedy that they cut out was... You know,
black comedy.
The kind that people now dig, but they really didn't get it all. They didn't know what I was up to with that whole business of Tamaroff and his boys, which is still some of, but it was wild in its full version, you know.
Yeah. His wig falling off.
Yes.
There was a whole thing about the Grandy, the whole quality of Grandy, that's Akim Tamaroff, with the wig falling off and all that. That was all that kind of black humor that a lot of which was cut.
Yes.
And,
Well, the blind woman wasn't supposed to be funny.
No, not at all. But I just wanted to talk about a little bit about Akim Tamarov's character and the, you know, that whole conception of the sort of slightly ridiculous heavy. He wasn't really the heavy. He was almost like comic relief in a certain way.
Yeah, he's a comic heavy, you know. His sources are in life, you know. The world's full of comic heavies. There are more of them in life than in movies. You know, I think most heavies are funny. Really, you know. Real heavies.
Yeah,
know.
Yeah. And did you... yeah, that's right. But he said there's still a threat there. You know, you feel that he could conceivably hurt you.
Yes, oh sure, he's a heavy.
Yeah.
And he's funny, sure. But there have been comic heavies in dramatic literature, you know. Most famous 19th century one is, I suppose, Robert Macaire, you know. Great star role. And he's funny and frightening.
What play? Is that a play?
Robert Macaire, yes.
I don't know that play.
And there's also a version of it in by Stevenson play. I'm just pulling him out of the air, just trying to think of people who are both menacing and funny.
Yeah, funny. Mm.
He hasn't anything to do with Grandi. He's quite another kind. It's the great role of Lemet, Frederick Lemet, the actor, mm-hmm. made it famous in the middle of the last century.
What was it?
It was Richard Burton.